Hello, and welcome to the Small Business University audio presentation of the month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching small business owners how to run profitable companies. Each month, a different national speaker or business owner shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Most listening to this presentation have worked for at least a few other companies over the years. Why did you leave? Did you leave because of money, long hours, or working conditions? Perhaps, but research shows that 65% of people leave their existing job because their managers are not properly trained to manage them well. Guess what? Most listening to this presentation are currently owners and/or managers themselves. Now, if 65% of employees leave their jobs because of incompetent management, wouldn't it behoove each of us to pick up a few practical tips on how to better manage those who are responsible for? Well, the answer is, of course, yes. This month's speaker, Chuck Keenan, has over 40 years' experience to draw on. His company, Keenan & Associates, is totally focused on training current and future managers how to better manage their employees. If you want to retain your employees by becoming a better manager, then you might just want to sit down, get a pad and pencil, and take some notes. Let's listen to what Chuck has to say.
Over 40 years ago, I began my career in business, and for the first 30 years, I was part of corporate America and worked my way from the mailroom and a telephone company to a senior management position with responsibility for tens of millions of dollars and 600 employees. 10 years ago, I left corporate life and struck out on my own working with troubled companies and teaching leadership and management courses. In my role as employee and manager, I was able to observe some of the best and worst managers and leaders. I also took time to read and study the thoughts of the latest and greatest leadership gurus as they put their spin on the subject of leadership. Over time, I began to notice that no matter how the newest book dressed leadership, the fact is, leadership has not changed much since the beginning of time. Each new book gave us new language and a new twist and seemed to complicate the art of leadership. When I began teaching people how to manage and lead, I decided I would get back to the basics, so I wrote a course in leadership titled Leadership Lessons for Managers and Their Bosses, Getting Back to the Basics. The course has six parts. Part number one, what does a real leader look like and am I one? Part two, leading and retaining employees by knowing yourself and them. Part 3, give your employees the gift of passion and drive. Part 4, skills development utilizing statistical and observational analysis. Part 5, motivation management, motivating their way to get your work done your way. And last, servant leaders aren't wimps, it just sounds like it. The next step I took was to look at management and try and define it simply. In order to simply define leadership, I decided I needed to define it in one sentence, and this is the definition I came up with. Leadership is the art of serving people with the intent to create success for the team and the individual. In essence, it's your responsibility to provide everything from vision to the tools for your employees to perform their jobs in an efficient and effective manner. The employee's job is to use the vision and the tools to perform their job and contribute to the profits of the company so that the company will thrive and provide a livelihood for all the employees in management. You serve your employees and they serve you. Leadership is not a one-sided dictatorial exercise, but a collaborative effort between you and your employees. Now that we have our facts straight about what the employees are thinking and what responsibilities are yours and theirs, let's look at how all this plays out in practical terms. In my seminars, I discuss 12 deadly sins made by managers that will destroy their effort to lead. We'll talk about those. We will also cover practical suggestions for everyday management. We can't cover the 6-hour course in 30 minutes, but I will share some of the highlights with you. Before we talk about how to lead people, we need to get a little insight into what the employee is thinking and feeling. In Marcus Buckingham and Kurt Kaufman's book, First Break All the Rules, they surveyed employees to see what concerned them, and they discovered 6 things that your employees are concerned about. First, does my supervisor or someone at work seem to care about me as a person? Second, At work, do I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day? Third, do I know what is expected of me? Fourth, do I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right? Then, is there someone at work who encourages my development? And last, in the last 7 days, have I received recognition and praise for good work? In another study done by Captain D. Michael Abshoff and noted in his book, It's Your Ship, we're told that 65% of those people leaving our companies are leaving because of management and supervision's treatment of the employees. They're not leaving because of salaries. They're not leaving because the Coke machine isn't full. They're not leaving for any other reason than the way we as management treat them. The employees express their thoughts by giving us four areas of responsibility that they felt we had failed in. First, no respect. Second, not being listened to. Third, they had no impact. They didn't feel like they had any impact on the job they were doing or the results of the corporation. And last, lack of responsibility. They did not feel that they were responsible for the result of anything because of the way we've made them into robots as managers, telling them exactly what to do, when to do it, what time to do it, who to do it with, and that's very trying for the employees. As we move through the sins and the steps, I want you to do something for me. I want you to picture in your mind the best manager and leader you ever worked for and the worst manager and leader you ever worked for. And as we go through these sins and as we go through the practical application part, I want you to rate those managers in your mind in each step, in each sin, and in each practical application. Along with that, and probably more importantly, I want you to rate yourself. So, let's begin. First, we're going to go through the sins. The first one is, don't train your employees. When I'm having discussions with managers and leaders, and I ask about training, I usually hear the virtues of the technical training their employees received, and nothing about any other kind of training. When we send a technician into the field, we're relatively sure they're good technicians. But are they good customer relations people? Without training in how to treat your customers, you are leaving to chance the relationship you have with your customers. Another aspect of training that is sorely overlooked is supervisory and management training. Remember, 65% of your employees leave your company because of ill-trained managers and supervisors. So when you think of training, you should broaden your field of view and decide what training is needed in your company for each individual given the job that they do. So look at them as customer relations people, look at them as technicians, look at them as managers and supervisors. Just look at them 360 degrees and see what kind of training they need. The next sin is don't respect your team. Managers have a tendency to treat employees like children. We have all had a manager who nitpicks every detail of everything we do. We have also had managers that take credit for ideas their people give them. How about the manager who has you pass every decision, no matter how small, past them? When your manager treats you this way, how do you feel? You sure don't feel respected. You may feel stupid and you may be angry, but you don't feel respected. Another way to dishonor your team is to hide things from them. It's sometimes necessary to keep certain facts or plans to yourself until you're ready to act, but this should be the exception, not the rule. When you hide things from your team, they begin to make up rumors. They speculate and talk about what might be going on. You lose respect and you lose productivity. I was with a company that was in real trouble. It took months to work our way out of the problem. During these crisis times, I held a 5-minute meeting every other day to update the employees in my department on the progress or lack of progress we were making. Unlike other departments, I lost only 10% of my workforce during the period of this crisis, and other departments were losing 40 to 60% of their employees, and they were having a heck of a time rehiring replacements. Keeping people informed gives them a sense that they're part of the team in good and bad times and that you are counting on them to be there in a crisis. One last point on respect. If you want a crew that not only doesn't respect you but puts the entire burden of the success of your company or your department on your shoulders, make all their decisions for them. When you do this, you relieve them of all responsibility for the outcome of their actions and show them that you don't trust them. Some decisions have to be reserved for management, but many can and should be made by the person responsible to get the job done. The next sin is, don't earn your team's respect. Entrepreneurs tend to think that they are God's gift to business. Well, I have a hot flash for all of us. We have partners and employees that have much stronger skills than we do in some areas. When you don't recognize that, you become known as the know-it-all. And trust me, no one respects a know-it-all, especially the person who has the talent to know when you're blowing smoke. I've developed a set of pledges titled, As a Member of the Team, I Promise, and As the Leader of Our Team, I Promise. One of the leader's pledges states, lead when appropriate and follow when necessary. Allowing employees, frontline associates, and supervisors to take the lead when they are the ones with a particular talent buys you a great amount of respect. It doesn't demean you. It shows your ability to judge a situation and put the right person in the lead. It shows your leadership skills and brings respect for you as a leader. One other major problem of respect is the age-old custom of shooting the messenger. When someone comes to you and delivers bad news, it's not a good time to become belligerent and attack the person who has the courage to step up and deliver the information you must have. It's time to calmly thank them for bringing the situation to your attention and ask them to gather the members of the team necessary to assist you in problem solving. You cannot shoot the messenger too many times before your entire staff is saying, not me, I'm not going in there. I don't get paid enough to give this guy bad news. Last time, he didn't quit yelling at me for 10 minutes, and then he said, just go fix it. When you lose your composure, you are showing everyone that you're not cool under fire, that you are frightened of the situation, and have no confidence in your team reacting to the problem. You also discourage the timely transmission of important data to you. In fact, I've seen employees stick their heads in the sand and watch a problem fester until it becomes a major crisis because no one would walk into the lion's den and deliver the bad news. Earn their respect with a calm presence in the crisis. When the crisis is over, you can do a postmortem and see what happened and how to prevent the problem from occurring in the future. But at the time, be calm, be cool, and get the problem solved. Because of time constraints, I'll combine three related sins in this next section. They are, don't set high standards, don't measure performance, just guess, and allow incompetence. How many of you listening to this presentation have ever worked with an associate that did not do a good job? And how many of you had to pick up the slack for that employee? Well, if you have ever been in this situation, you know why these sins are so devastating to a team's attitude and performance. When we don't keep track of who's performing and who's not, we condemn our best employees to a life of frustration and a heavier workload. Eventually, the frustration leads to your best employees moving to another company or department to find a leader who treats their employees even-handedly. If you're measuring the efficiency and effectiveness of your employees, then you know who needs help and who you should be rewarding. You're not guessing. You know, and you can prove it with facts. Nothing is worse for morale than to see deficient employees rewarded for their performance. When you continue to retain an employee that is not able to perform their duties at the same level as their peers, you are rewarding them and punishing the competent employees. The only equitable way to react to a deficient employee is to rehabilitate them, move them to a job they're capable of doing, or terminate their employment. These are the only solutions that will protect your credibility with your team and fulfill your duty to your employer. To allow an employee to continue doing substandard work reduces morale, drags down productivity of the entire team, and costs you money. Not taking action in a timely manner only complicates the situation. Almost every supervisor and manager in the world has been given responsibility for a unit that has a person who is incapable of doing their job and has not been dealt with. The prior leader let an employee slide, and now the new supervisor is faced with a personnel record that shows an incompetent employee as being at least average. How do you deal with your problem employee? You have to start over and prove the case that should have been proven months or years ago. While you work to rectify the situation, you're losing productivity and have to rely on your best employees to take on extra work until you can build a case to release the employee, and that can take months. The solution is to set standards and apply them evenly through your responsibility area. When an employee needs retraining, provide the training. But when you need to remove someone, be sure your documentation is accurate and do it. Your competent employees will respect you for taking a hard stand and following through. They want you to protect them when they cannot protect themselves. Our next management sin is don't mentor your team members. Most companies sit down one time a year and review their employees. Some managers actually use management by objective and statistical analysis to rate the employee. The boss and the employee sit down and the boss proceeds to tell the subordinate where they went wrong and where they went right. Then a raise is given or withheld, and they part company for another year. Now, according to Webster's Dictionary, a mentor is a trusted counselor or guide. They are not a scorekeeper. Mentors help employees develop the skills they need to move forward in their career. Having a one-hour meeting one time a year does not qualify as mentoring. Remember the six things that concerned your employees? One of them was, is there someone at work who encourages my development? Do we spend enough time with our employees helping them to develop? If we spend the time to help them identify and hone their talents, we can depend on them to take on more responsibility and take some of the load off our shoulders. On the surface, managers state time is the reason for not pursuing mentoring through the year. But I sometimes wonder how much of the neglect of mentoring, especially in corporate America, is due to our insecurities. We look at talented people who work for us, and if we're honest, if only for a fleeting minute, we consider the fact that the more prepared our subordinates are to lead on their own, the more vulnerable we become in our position. We also consider that a well-trained leader could be pirated by a competitor. Keep in mind there's another side to this coin, and that is that you've prepared a replacement for yourself so that you can move up in the organization. Another very important advantage to mentoring is that you are judged by the results of the people who work for you. You be the judge of your own motives. The point is, if you do not mentor them, they are ambitious, they will leave your organization to find a position that will allow them to develop and advance. Again, I leave you the decision if mentoring will be harmful or helpful to your company and your career. My experience is that when I have invested time and effort into people who worked for me, I never regretted it. The people I worked with the closest became valuable supporters who were loyal to me and my organization. Even when they left my employment, they were still colleagues that I could rely on to advise me and share their views concerning our industry. If you invest in the right people, it will never come back to haunt you. But if you neglect your employees, the consequences can be devastating. I was in the United States Navy when I was younger, and one of the sins the Navy did not commit was advertising accomplishments. When you walk up to an officer or enlisted man in their dress uniform, their entire history is in front of you if you know how to read it. The first thing you notice is the uniform. In the Navy, each successive rank classification has a separate uniform. Commissioned officers wear one type uniform, warrant officers another, chiefs another, and enlisted personnel still another. Each has a distinctive uniform. Next, you look at their shoulder, and you can see their rank, and you can tell what their specialty is. You look at their sleeve, and you're able to see how many years they've been in service. But most important and revered is the ribbons on their chest that tell you their accomplishments in war and peace. The armed forces have become experts in honoring the accomplishments of their members. When possible, families are invited to award ceremonies so that they can become part of the honor ceremony. How does corporate America honor and celebrate the accomplishments of their teammates? First, let me say that for the most part, we do a pretty poor job of honoring our own. Many times we ignore actions above and beyond the call of duty, except to say thank you in the confines of our office. If you want to boost the morale of your employees, then put a program together that says thank you publicly and continues to say thank you over time. I know we can't all wear uniforms, but there are things we can do to honor our employees. First, don't wait until review time to show the outstanding employee that you are grateful for their contributions. Here's an example of how a great reward program might look in your business. Develop a system by which you can measure your employees and a system that can recognize someone who has gone beyond your measurements in providing a service to your company or your customers. If an employee deserves recognition, don't put their name on a plaque on the wall in the hallway. Put it on their uniform or on the front of their desk or on the side of their truck. Let them carry their awards with them. Let's say you have a fleet of service trucks, and let's say your goal is to have one-stop service. You might set a goal that states that the outstanding performance is a service person that has only 5% return calls a month. When one of your service personnel meets this standard, have the company logo painted on the side of their truck. Trust me, all your employees will be looking to see how many insignias are on the side of trucks and whose trucks they are. Customers will ask the employee what the insignias are for, and then the employee will be able to feel the pride of explaining the system to the customer. Another way to honor your employees is to send a thank you card to their house. Don't put it on their desk or hand it to them. Mail it to their house. When they open the note at home, family members will ask what the note's about, and the employee will have the thrill of explaining that their boss took time to thank them for a job well done. What do you think the employees will be feeling when they're able to be honored by their entire family? These are just a few of the ways you can honor your employees. Don't kid yourself. No matter what these employees say about these sorts of awards and rewards, being corny, they still feel honored, and when they are recognized in front of other people, it's a good thing. Recognition of this kind does not take the place of sharing the wealth through salaries and bonuses, but it does make a huge difference in your employees. They want to be recognized as valued members of the team, and you should do it every chance you get. The last sin I have time to talk about is, don't listen to your employees, and if you do, don't react to what you hear. Have you ever gone to your boss's office to discuss a complex issue or concerns of yours and have them ignore you? Let me set the scene. You walk into your boss's office and say, can I have a minute of your time to discuss the accounting audit that's coming up? Your boss looks up from the letter she's proofreading and says, sure, come on in. You sit down and begin to outline your concerns about the audit while your boss continues to proofread the letter. Now, some people would say she's very efficient with her time, a great multitasker. I would call her just plain rude. How about the boss who answers their phone while in the middle of a meeting with you? Does that make you feel like your boss feels your time is important, or does it tell you that her time is important? When we don't pay attention to our employees when they come to talk with us, we're insulting them. When an employee approaches you and asks if you have time to talk with them, be honest. If you don't have time, say, no, I have a few things I've got to finish first. Can we get together in about an hour? I'll have time then to give you my full attention. If you have time when they ask you to talk with them, do a few simple things to show you honor their time. First, ask for someone to take your phone messages or let the phone go to voicemail while you're talking with the employee. Second, move any papers you have in front of you to your inbox so you won't be tempted to read them while the person's talking. In other words, give the person your undivided attention. Third, really listen to what the person's saying. Ask questions. Get a real understanding of the issues at hand. Feedback your understanding of the issues to the employee and be sure you have a good understanding. Now that you've heard the issues, you might want to answer the question or you might want to gather more information. If you need to gather more information, that's fine, but get back to the person with an answer. Don't ignore the problem or you will have made the unpardonable sin of indicating to your employee that their concern is not important enough for you to address without their continued follow-up. Once the monkey's on your back, you must deal with it in a timely manner or get back to the person you owe the answer to and let them know you've not forgotten them and we'll get back to them shortly. Feedback is important to your employees. Just being a good listener is not sufficient. You must respond. I was asked to aid a company to get to the bottom of their employees' grievances, some of which were trivial and some of which were actually about the management team. The objective was to have a disinterested third party meet with the employees and solicit any and all grievances, and then to pass them on to management anonymously. I conducted the meeting and the interviews necessary, and then had a meeting with management to present the grievances. Then, with my part of the exercise complete, I withdrew from the project. A few months later, I was asked to return and speak to the employees because something had gone wrong with the process. Within 5 minutes of the first follow-up meeting, I knew what the problem was. Management had done very little in the way of answering the employee grievances. In fact, they only addressed the items that were easily rectifiable, and those items that were difficult were not addressed. These managers had made a terrible mistake. They solicited collaboration with their employees and then ignored the very people they had asked to help them. It's better for you to put your head in the sand and pretend all is well than to ask your employees for their opinion and then ignore the answers and the inquiries. You must give the employees an answer. The answer doesn't have to be what they want to hear. They can take a negative answer as long as they're told the reasoning behind the answer. But to ask for them to become involved and then to ignore them is asking for morale to become worse by tenfold. Be honest. If you don't have an answer or can't reveal the solution, tell them. They can take it. Just don't ignore them. It can only make things worse. We've been talking about the sins of management and some of the ways to avoid them. Now I'm going to switch gears a bit and talk about everyday actions we can take to make life easier for our employees and ourselves. First, recognize that your team members and colleagues have pressures on them. They have projects and responsibilities that they need to address. Now along we come and need them to drop everything and do something for us. How do you go about getting their cooperation? One way is to ask, not command. Think about this simple three-word phrase, ask, not command. Think about how you want to be treated by your boss when you're in the middle of a project and they walk up to you and say, drop what you're doing and have this on my desk in 30 minutes. Contrast that approach to this. Tom, I know you're busy, but I need your help. I have to get this to corporate in 30 minutes. Can you put it together for me? You're the guy who can. Now the results will be the same because they work for you and they'll do it. But there is something to be said for feeling like you've been asked to be a part of something rather than being ordered to do it. We all want our time and feelings respected. Sometimes we need our boss to affirm that they understand the pressure we're under. Second, we would like to be treated with respect. Ask, don't command says, I know you're busy and I know this is an imposition, but I need your help. A little respect goes a long way. My next tip is be on station. One experience I had with leaders is that they're not always on station, and early in my career, I had this situation. I worked with a team of managers who went out every Friday afternoon in the summer and played golf or went to the racetrack. Their bosses were in California, and we were quartered in Chicago. To add insult to injury, we were instructed to cover for them if the West Coast called. This was before cell phones, we had to make up excuses for why the majority of our management team was not on station. What would your reaction be if you were put in that situation? Well, the people I worked with reacted this way. The break room was filled with middle managers who felt if the big guys were off playing and they had to stay and watch the shop, they didn't have to do too much work. It got so bad that the middle managers would decide which of them could take 2 or 2.5 hour lunches and which of them would have to hold down the fort. People resent having to work when the big guys go out to play. It cost the company a lot of wasted time and profits until the situation is rectified. Next, make hard decisions. Leaders are paid to make hard decisions. It's not fun, but it's necessary. In another crisis situation I was involved in, a company was going under because it had lost business and could not support the number of people on the payroll. When we asked the owner why he didn't cut the payroll until things picked up, he said he just couldn't. The people working for me are long-term employees, and they're depending on me. In the end, the company closed because they defaulted with their creditors rather than lay off any of the people. All the employees lost their jobs because the leader could not make a tough decision. Don't be a manager that sinks the ship because they can't make decisions that need to be made. Next, remember, fear is contagious. When a leader shows fear, that leader's telling the team they have no confidence in the team's ability to dig out of the problem. Let's imagine that you've been called into the senior manager's office and told that because of a loss of a major client, you either have to cut 10% of the workforce or show a 15% reduction in expenses. Your reaction is to gather your team into a room and proceed to tell them how your boss is demanding ridiculous things and a 15% reduction in other expenses, it just isn't possible. The leader has just signed the team's death warrant. If you don't believe in them, they're not going to believe in themselves, and they will begin to hide so they won't be part of the 10% cut. Their reasoning might be, if you don't contribute, you can't make a mistake. Let one of the other guys stick their neck out, but I'm keeping my head down and riding this one out. Fear begets fear. Stay calm and trust your team. If you have the right people in the right positions, they'll step up and do their best to save the day. If they feel you have confidence in their ability to overcome the situation, they'll have confidence. Now I want to talk about doing the right thing. By doing the right thing, I don't mean that you should do the right thing as long as there's no risk to you. You have to do the right thing because it's right. One day I was called in the middle of the night and told that one of my managers had been in a head-on car crash and might not live. I got up and went to the hospital and did what I could for the family. It took 5 months for the manager to heal from her physical injuries. The week before she was to return to work, she called me and said she had a problem. She couldn't get behind the wheel of a car. She was too scared. She told me she had an appointment with a counseling group that said they could help her, but it might take a few months. Please understand that this was a very good, long-term, loyal employee. I passed the information to the president of our company and was asked to come to his office and discuss the situation. When I got to his office, he asked me to replace the manager who was hurt. I asked why, and he said we can't go on short-staffed in her department. I asked if anyone was complaining about the workload. The rest of my team had taken over and covered for this manager, and I just wondered if they had been complaining. He said, no, I just don't feel it's fair to the other employees to keep working so hard with an uncertain outcome. I asked how he could let the injured manager down when she needed us. We sure made many demands on her when she was healthy. I went on to ask if we had any responsibility to protect her job while she was down. He didn't answer my question. He just asked me to make the call. I stood up, walked over to his desk, wrote the manager's phone number on a sheet of paper and handed it to the president. I told him if anyone was going to fire this lady, it was going to have to be him because I didn't believe it was the right thing to do. I left the office wondering what the consequences were going to be for me, but I was content with my action. The end of the story is that he never made the call, and 6 weeks later the manager returned to give us many more years of service. You have to do what's right, even when it may not look like the best thing for you. Your team recognizes it when you let them down for your gain or because you are scared to do the right thing. That's when they start to judge your decisions not on merit, but what's in it for you. Then they start making decisions the same way that you do, and you no longer have a team. You have a bunch of people looking out for number one and forget everyone else. Your credibility and respect rating goes to zero. I have a test that I give myself when I'm not sure my decision is correct. It goes like this. 1. Are you breaking the law? 2. Are you breaking company policy? And last, if you stick with your decision and it gets published in the newspaper, would you want your mother to read the article? Answer those three questions, yes, and you've made a good decision. We spent the last half hour delving into what it's like to be a servant leader. It is a management style that I believe is the best way to lead a team. It's not all about the leader, but it's all about the team. The last 2 points I have for you are these. First, set the course, define the rules, and let the competent work. And second, James Ormond said, a great leader never sets himself above his followers except in carrying the responsibility.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call with your comments. The Small Business University audio series is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963, or check out our website at www.grandiassociates.com. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.